Hi, everybody. Oh, I love that. I love a wave. I appreciate it. Oh, this is really nice. Thank you for making me smile. I just want to thank you all for joining us in celebrating summer and all things poetry, the Hemingway Summer Poetry Series. It's week 7, and it's the second to last poetry reading of the year. I know. I'm so sad. It feels like the summer literally just disappeared in front of my eyes. But, you know, here we are. We can continue to celebrate it. Week 7 tonight will feature Mantis, Paycheck, Judith Robinson, Megan Sidlow, and Anastasia Walker. So if you could just join me giving a round of applause for all of our readers. A little bit about myself and White Whale quickly. I'm Halsey Heyer, the events coordinator here at White Whale Bookstore. White Whale Bookstore is a family-owned, general-interest independent store located in the Bloomfield neighborhood of Pittsburgh. Our store motto is conversation, community, and culture, and we strive to be a home for book lovers. Our events programming features local, national, and international writers and translators reading, discussing, and celebrating literature of all genres and for all ages. And if you're here tonight, we have a few events that we think you might be interested in. And I also have a very special announcement that's very exciting. So on Thursday, July 28th at 7 p.m., we are thrilled to celebrate the launch of a local writer we've hosted many times, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with, William Lychak. So you can come to the store to hear from his latest, Sounds of the Night, and he'll be joined in the store by Jeff Condren, author of Claire, Waiting into the Dewy Night, and the live stream will be available for that. Then on Thursday, August 4th at 7 p.m., we're stoked to celebrate the launch of Rochelle Hertz. Join us in the store to hear from her latest, The J Girls, and she'll be joined by Zan Phillips, author of Paul and Lisa Sumi, and the live stream will also be available for that one as well. And then since, you know, we love locals here, of course, read a local poetry reading, we are hosting a celebration for Lena Crow's debut Fire Season, and she's reading with a crowd favorite, Brandon Getz, author of Stop Me If You've Heard This One Before, and that one is on Monday, August 8th, so come through, you know. And then the really exciting announcement is that we are launching workshops again. So that's like very exciting. And we are accepting proposals. Yeah, we can clap for that. And we're accepting proposals. So if you've always dreamed of getting paid to teach a workshop, you know, I want to see your proposal. So please send it to me. All that info is on the workshop page on our website. So check it out. And so as all of you know, we are also currently live streaming on Zoom, pointing at my phone. Hello, everybody on Zoom. We do have quite a few people who are online as well. So thank you so much for joining us digitally tonight. Just a few notes about some protocol for the evening. We do ask that you keep your mask on at all times unless you are actively eating or drinking or talking at the mic for my readers this evening. The restrooms are behind me. I do ask you to refrain from using the bathroom while the readers are reading, but of course, if it's an emergency, do not hold it. Listen to your body and just go ahead and use them. The door at the back of the cafe is locked. That's just so whenever the reading is happening, I can check people's vax cards on the other side. If you do need to get out that door, you can just pop the lock, go out that way, totally fine. The cafe side is closed, you know, Allie just packed up, so, you know, no more drinks for the evening, but I hope that you got the beverages that you so desired before that happened. And then we also have some of the writer's books in stock, and I have them housed on the other side by the register, so on your way out, come see them and buy them from me. And I think that is all from me. It's my absolute pleasure to turn things over to our guest introductory person, Scott. Woo!
Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Scott Silsby. I'm not Christopher Collins. I'd like to thank Halsey, Tad, Jill, and White Whale for hosting us once again this evening. When Chris and Joan asked me to fill in for Chris doing this reading opening, I'll admit it made me a little nervous, but I was honored they asked me, so I accepted. Part of my nervousness surely stemmed from my feeling that Chris is so good at what he does up here. Another factor is likely my great respect for this reading series and for the work that Joan, Chris, Jimmy, and Don have done with it over the years. I have some very fond memories associated with this series, so here's hoping I don't muck it up. I've attended several of the readings this season here in person. I tuned in via Zoom last week, and I've also gone to the blog to listen or re-listen to several recordings recently. Joan will be plugging the blog later, no doubt. In preparing to do these opening remarks and looking for a poem I wanted to read as part of it, I found myself questioning why I'm such a Hems Summer Reading Series fanboy. Why am I such a poetry junkie? I knew the answer, or answers, of course, or at least I thought I did. But I decided to put them down on paper so I could share them with you all. One thing I know for sure, I find that these readings regularly inspire me. They make me want to create, to go on continuing to make something. And that's not a sensation you run into all that often, or at least I don't. I think one reason that I get that feeling is because I have a sense that I am part of something bigger than myself, a community, I guess. Poetry helps me appreciate my life more, the living of it. And Chris, Joan, the readers, they do that too. And that goes for the audiences as well. Readings aren't as much fun without an audience. So I want to express my gratitude. I think being grateful is very important to articulate it. Joan, Don, Mantis, Bob, Judy, Anastasia, Tutu Tutulo, Chris, wherever you are with a child in each hand, I'm sure. Audience members here in the room and there on the Zoom, I thank you. As a token of my gratitude, I offer this poem. It's by Marie Howe. What the living do. Johnny, the kitchen sink has been clogged for days. Some utensil probably fell down there. And the drain won't work but smells dangerous. And the crusty dishes have piled up, waiting for the plumber I still haven't called. This is the everyday we spoke of. It's winter again. The sky's a deep, headstrong blue, and the sunlight pours through the open living room windows because the heat's on too high in here and I can't turn it off. For weeks now, driving or dropping a bag of groceries in the street, the bag breaking, I've been thinking, this is what the living do. And yesterday, hurrying along those wobbly bricks in the Cambridge sidewalk, spilling my coffee down my wrist and sleeve, I thought it again. And again later, when buying a hairbrush, this is it. Parking, slamming the car door shut in the cold. What you called that yearning, what you finally gave up. We want the spring to come and the winter to pass. We want whoever to call or not call, a letter, a kiss. We want more and more and then more of it. But there are moments walking when I catch a glimpse of myself in the window glass, say, the window of the corner video store, and I'm gripped by a cherishing so deep for my own blowing hair, chapped face, and unbuttoned coat that I'm speechless. I am living. I remember.
Thank you
again, and please help me in welcoming up to the mic the great Joan Bauer.
Will now probably just fall on the floor. Okay, let's see. I really want to thank you all for coming out tonight. It's a beautiful summer evening, and there are plenty of places you could be. And those of you in Zoom world, I mean, you could be doing your sports, who knows? I don't know. But I'm really happy you're here for poetry. And that was a wonderful introduction, Scott, and a wonderful choice of a poem by Marie Howe. Wow. A big thank you to all of you, to White Whale for letting us be here and keep the series going for yet another year in such a wonderful setting. And we'll just get started. And I would first, however, just remind the readers that we'll do a photo after the reading, so don't scamper out. Scott, and that we will be having what Jimmy used to call the grand finale, which used to be like about 10 people on the stage. It was just like crazed. Then we would have 2 minutes to read. But we will be having the grand finale in 2 weeks, and it will be actually Jason Baldinger, Sharon Fagan McDermott, Dina November, and Adrian Ramirez, not 10 people on the stage, but those four. They'll be wonderful. I hope you will all be here for that in person or in spirit or via Zoom or however you can get here. So getting started. And our first reader tonight is Magis, who writes from the intersections of Black, femme, queer, and artist. They are Pittsburgh born and Hill District raised. She has performed her poetry at universities, open mics, launch parties, book tours, featured showcases throughout Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and New York City. Their writing appears under her name, also under her name, Tyra Jameson. Appears under her name, Magis. But her real name is Tyra Jameson, in case you were wondering. And her work appears in Whirlwind Magazine, Apiary, Underground Pool, L'Ephemère Revue. Okay. The Bridge and Tender, a literary anthology and book of spells, Evidence, 2020. So this is really exciting. And this is Magis's first reading for the Hemingway Poetry Series. So please welcome Magis, AKA Tyra Jameson.
Folks, thank you all for coming through. My name is Mantis. Government name is Tyra. So thank you to everybody that tuned in via Zoom. Let me practice my microphone etiquette. All of those things are true in the bio. I got a lot of sides to me. One of the things that I'm most proud of is this book right here, The Root Work Stretch. And one of the things that I'm most thankful for is Disha Filial and Vanessa German for publishing this work. This is something that is just very, very personal to me. So I'm gonna flip through probably a couple poems from here, and then I got a new poem for y'all. And this will probably be my last time publicly reading poetry for a little minute. I'm going to be engaging with writing differently from here on out. And let's start that timer. All right, this poem is called A Womanist's Manifesto after Alice Walker. And the epigraph is a quote from Alice Walker. Womanist is to feminist as purple is to lavender. Womanist dyes pink pussy hat purple. Womanist has a back of 250 virgins. Womanist, a picked violet under investigation. Womanist gutted by suffragettes. Womanist wields the womb as a weapon. Womanist tends to the children of the marches. Womanist claps ass on a Saturday night and conjures more cash than a civilian could dream of. Womanist turns pink pussy hat to ash because pussy don't make a woman. Womanist spends years reclaiming stolen theory, stripped of practice. Womanist enslaved by the first wave's fathers. Womanist missed the second wave's tolerant tide. Womanist too tired to make the third wave work. Womanist told she hates herself by the movements who taught her to hate herself. Womanist was never with Hillary, Kamala, or the next girl boss in blue. Womanist watches stretch marks fracture her identity to three-fifths. Womanist, the trees chopped to tear down the tenements. Womanist, the roots regenerated from the unwanted tenements. Womanist makes a Molotov cocktail of pink pussy hat and hard lemonade. Womanist broke 250 bridges, lifting Moloch to feminist heaven. Womanist burns her back to lift liberation from the sea. Womanist sees freedom, a handmade star streaking across a purple sky. Thank you. A little bit uncomfortable, and that's okay. Still buy my book after, please. All right, and then this poem right here is called Psalms 27:1. I like to think about it as a condensed way of telling the story of my birth. Like many Black babies in Allegheny County, due to medical neglect and inequality, I was born a premature baby. And my birth was something of great emergency and risk, and also one of great care. So this poem is dedicated to my mother, Roberta Jameson. Psalm, and also my ancestors who gave my mother the verse to pray with for this psalm. So this is called Psalms 27:1. They say the best time to cast a spell is during a storm. Another word for spell is prayer, as in the repetition of verse, as in hanging an entire destiny on words. I owe my life to them after all. All it took was my mother's prayer, a single verse to save us from drowning in flood waters of blood and amniotic fluid. All it took was a single spell, the lighthouse and the lightning, guiding me against seven swirling seas. And on the next page is the verse, which is Psalms 27:1, which is, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? And a little bit of background around that poem is just simply, as someone that comes from a liberation tradition spiritually, we use the Bible even if all of us aren't necessarily Christians. So that's all I'll say on that. Let's go with, the second movement of petitioning my memory, respecting my mind. Respect my mind is something that my aunt Kathleen Jameson says a lot, and it's language that I picked up. So I consider language something that can also be passed down through generations. So this is an erasure poem, visually Easter eyes as well as hearing it. So this is called Petitioning My Memory, Respecting My Mind. I have enough roses, beloved. Your fast pace shows me how to breathe rhythms of rain into myself. There's more of me than the container. I create love whole, more than what anyone meant to show me. I live how the mess of love shows me. I gotta fill me up, trust, try, know I'm always worthy of all of me. That all roads lead to an ocean, expansive, endless, rippling love. Love like the body calls rest. Migrate to dopamine, listen for timing. Talk to me, love. Protect all the love, conjuring the mountain open. Stay ready to offer what runs over this tide to each hope burning through the pain. Deliver the ocean, chase the moon. So this last poem I'm going to end on is a new poem called For Your Money. I identify as like a romantic poet, even if it gets a little intense sometimes. Romance is very intense. I wrote this during a nail appointment, like in my head, because I also am very neurodivergent. So like sitting still is just like a lot going on in the brain.
And I was thinking about intimacy, the intimacy of money and things like that. And they're actually, Channel 4 News has a segment called For Your Money, and that was on. And so I was like, oh my God, it's the perfect title for this song. So here we go. I accidentally held my nail tech stand today. Outside the salon, I bend and create little contortions to please the eye, but here she tells me, relax. I blush, a 13-year-old Black girl that should have known she wasn't straight. I could have said, what if I'm ticklish? What if you're rough? What if you use my heart as a stage to replay your childhood abandonment just to call that your attachment style? Are we moving too fast? My mind does. So I say, okay, and let my fingers curl over hers. The news hums with a white man coercing our tax money to the newest world war that they won't call a world war. A Black mayor pathologizing Black children, tracing a culture of violence to Fortnite and the weather. Sorry, my nail tech says, presenting my bleeding nail bed to me with the same anxiety I held about holding her hand. I want to say, we should just go with red, with a head tilt and a shrug, tell her that's just my body's protest against these ladylike rituals. Instead, I say, it's okay. Compliment her nails bright enough to shine through her latex gloves. She continues to paint milky pools on my nails during my pedicure. She asked me to come closer to her, but your body can relax. While working, I told a man that money is a lot more intimate than its reputation allows. He scoffs and calls me hungry, like that's not also a function of the body. At the salon, my mind adds up the cost of service and I calculate the best tip. Because the most intimate part of this exchange is how both of us insist you deserve more than what they gave you. Come in.
Oh,
thank you. Yes, if you want to learn more about me, you can always follow me at Marvel at Mantis on Instagram, and then there's an Instagram for the book where I'll probably have a lot more of my writing things. Thank you, Joan. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, White Whale. And yeah, thank you for everybody that made this possible. So yeah.
That was really great. Thank you, Mantis. Thanks so much. I'm gonna stand on tiptoes here. Let's see. I wanted just to mention that Chris is okay. He is fine, actually, but he had a family commitment, and that is why he couldn't be here. But don't worry, he's not. Nothing bad's going on. So, he is such a great partner in the series. It's really wonderful to work with him, and it is. I really appreciate Scott pinching in for my day. And I know Chris really wanted to be here. So our next reader is Bob Paycheck, who is a longtime creative writer from Pittsburgh. He runs the Chapbook Press, Ziegler Boy, and writes poker news articles for money. Yes. Okay. His book of poems, The Trolley Man, was published by Logos Press in 2015. His latest collection, Panda Magic, was published in 2020. Please welcome Bob Paycheck.
Thank you, Ben. That was great. Thank you so much. 13 miles of strip malls, not a liquor store in sight. I have to find one by 9 p.m. or to lock the doors up tight. If I find one at 9:02, they'll leave me in the cold. And all I want before I go to bed is some whiskey for my soul. I said, all I want before I go to bed is some whiskey for my soul. Some people might tell me I'm addicted to alcohol, but the leathernecks would sneer, I have no problems at all. Maybe I'm just lonely, just not tough enough. The whiskey has mostly helped me whenever life turned rough. I said, Whiskey has mostly helped me whenever life turned rough. A disturbing glimpse. It's midnight. I see my neighbor open his door and notice a giant American flag hanging on his living room wall. The heart is loneliness. I'm fighting something here, something big and hairy. It feels like my skin is made of a bed of nails wired to an atmospheric sensor. All day, my stomach eats itself. I am the scale of Kenny without a fortune. Did someone turn up Earth's gravity? And if not, why do my insides feel squished into a glob found in an old bucket of paint? Rubber and mineral oil and scentless existence that now has to be thrown away in a particular way so as not to poison the water supply. Wow. Thanks. A little lighter, Jackrabbit. We often give into it and end up in cemeteries and playgrounds and behind backstops. And as long as I live, we'll never forget going at it in the little kitchen in the back of pavilion number 2, the Jackrabbit right on the edge of neon. When among the roar of the coaster, ripping down the hillside, shaking the hell out of everyone with that violent double dip and violent reentry back to the station, came the clomping of black leather shoes. A Kennywood cop there to turn on the string of hot yellow lights. Off we went in a hurry. Thou S for Scotty. Curtis Dilber plays the trombone like Scott Silsby writes poems. Creature from the Black Lagoon. I want to turn off the lights and take you there. Saturday night, we saw the commercial on TV, Bingo. Chili Billy in a highway tux on a Tuesday, Wednesday. Before you call, make sure you have a good bingo. We never had a good bingo. Damn, what's the station? WPGH? Ma and Paul Kettle? For some reason, we went ape shit for Creature from the Black Lagoon in 3D, sponsored by Kogo's, where you had to grab the red and blue cardboard glasses. And we did. Me, my mom, and my sister. And it's one of those memories. We all have them, but maybe we deny them. I can see as clear as a 20-hour movie. Climbing into the giant car, driving up 30 to Kogo's, storming the place, neon nylon shorts, all that sunlight and industrial commercial shelving, the M&Ms, the popcorn, and the fish. It worked. Prehistoric fish circled our living room. I nearly cried. Forget the West. Plastic. I honestly don't care. I've eaten a greasy thumbprint on my sandwich. Don't count on me unless someone wants to grab a son of a bitch and peel their face on YouTube. I love whiskey in tiny bottles. Jaeger, too. And I don't recycle, even though every turtle in the whole goddamn world is full of plastic. Just want to let the shitheads of the future know. In reality, no one gave a fuck. I don't even drink whiskey, by the way. And this is why. The Zipper Club. Already writing about my heart attack. Hey, I better. I may not survive it. So much of my time is just spent waiting for it to happen. My grandfather, dead at 56, heart attack, just killed over, slobbering and snoring right in front of Marie, his fourth wife. It makes it worse he died at dawn in the purple mush. I am not a morning person. My mother, her quadruple bypass and a month in a coma. My uncles, Barry and Vic, and also my Aunt Angie, all members of the Zipper Club. I swear there's an ache right now, either gas or death, in an old clavicle thing. It all gets stuck down there in the chest. I move and nothing happens until I take a deep breath and twist my arm through the hitch, and I'm so sick of the body, uncomfortable existence, and universal fear. Thank Just a few more. Thank you so much for having me and listening, coming out on this beautiful night tonight. Fast food. I see the kid laying tangled in his bicycle outside the McDonald's in San Diego. It's as if my brain was mechanically separated and pressed into the shape of an exit wound right then. I panicked when mom took us for dinner and for about a year made incredible scenes with full crazed tantrums to stop us from staying, always insisted on a drive-through. And when we did eat there because my sister wanted a ride Grimace, I'd wolf down everything and memorize escape routes, heart pounding in my ears, little feet pacing the rubber floor, filthy with pollen and ketchup splatters. The last stand of the saltwater humans. Oh God, okay, I realized this. Okay. I was drunk and shouldn't have been driving. Pete and Hannah's wedding at the Andy Warhol. And there you were, gray hoodie, head straight down, staring a hole through the pavement, waiting. I missed you and saved at least one of our lives. 911 said they already got the call. Man standing on 376 East. How long were you there waiting to be turned into spaghetti? How long have I buried the wires that will power my death? Where did I start and how did I get here? In a flash, I saw the years in jail, the marriage over. I felt the acid drip through the floors, toes dissolved. My wife was right there, and that's what scares me the most. Soon, the body will not be only made of fat, stone, and water. In fact, soon there will be no body, but several forms. Some people will choose machine, others upload into worlds to go on forever. If you got the cabbage, there will be yours. This is it. That is why now is so important. And I hope you're fine. Two more. Here's a label. Pittsburgh is the city of horses. Swallow that, hippies and sports fans. I swear they caused a calcified bumps in my mouth. If I had a pile of dough, I'm not sure I'd care. Why do I now? Makes me feel like a stupid man. Pittsburgh is now the city of Porsches, and I want to key them all. Wise potato chips are my absolute favorite and can't be beat. Not only are the chips fried the most golden, where every once in a while a burn one appears like a raunchy dream. It's reaching in and pulling out obnoxiously large chips, still sturdy for a glob of dip, usually from a tub of Turner's, but often from Snyder's, which is sweet. Drunk, they're clouds in the sky. I've crunched dog heads and patron saints, dumped elephants fried stiff. Some take 2-3 bites. Stood in a snack aisle, stuffing back tears on Super Bowl Sunday after grabbing the last giant bag the year my father died. He made dip out of cream cheese, chopped green olives with pimento, and a bunch of brine. Wise potato chips are fucking delicious, and now I have to unpack this. Found out they're owned by a huge nasty conglomerate, and it pangs. I could live with it being the official chip of the New York Mets, but this? What are we to do? No matter how much we try, our greasy fingers will always have to choose. A trip to the grocery store is a political test. Buying salmon at Walmart funds North Korea's nukes. Yingling is run by a bunch of union busting dickweeds. Hell, even texting someone I love you is carried on the backs of Chinese slaves. All those tiny parts dipped in mercury, eyesight disappearing. Each breath an injustice. Our grandparents' love for bananas peeled skin from human skulls. A man buried in the Westinghouse Bridge. Some Croatian guy, who gives a shit? Been this way forever. All our bones deserve to be crushed. Still, I dip and I dip. All right, one more, because that's a check. Panda Magic. Thank you again for having me. John Scott, thank you, Chris. Thank you for the followers. Panda Magic. This is for Jacqueline B, who just won $11,607.79. Penny slots at Rivers Casino. Gray mop top, easy and fast, flowered blouse, thin strap of purse hung tight over shoulder, cigarette ribbons wafting from the smoking section. Please don't tell your husband, Jackie. That money is yours. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Now, it's really a great pleasure to introduce my dear friend, Judy Robinson, who happens to be an editor, teacher, fiction writer, poet, and visual artist, a summa cum laude graduate of the University of Pittsburgh. She is listed in the Directory of American Poets and Writers and has published more than 100 poems, 5 poetry collections, 1 fiction collection, 1 novel, and she's co-edited 11 poetry collections, which I just think is exhausting to hear about. And I am in your awe, basically. She's a teacher at Osher at Carnegie Mellon and at University of Pittsburgh. Her newest poetry collection is Buy a Ticket, which is available for sale tonight from WordTech. And you can learn more about her at judyrrobinson.com. And I have to say, I had the pleasure and honor of co-editing an anthology with her back in 2005. And we had fun with that. We did. And we actually finished it. We did. Please welcome Judy Robinson.
Thank you so much, Joan. Isn't it nice to hear the variety of voices? Isn't this just a wonderful, wonderful thing to be doing? Thanks, White Whale. Thanks, fellow readers. Joan and Chris. Yeah, Joan and I have been at this for a long time and have had a lot of fun together. I will begin. Let's see, am I doing this? I've written a lot of poems about, I think everybody has themes. Every poet, every writer has certain things they come back to and they explore again and again. For me, family has always been uppermost. And so I thought I'd start with a couple of poems that are connected to members of my family. This is called Green Lunch. It's for Grant. Grant is my one and only grandchild. Green lunch. I'd like to write a poem when I'm hungry, stomach firing up the imagination with aromas of steaming pans and glowing yellow onions, frying, buttery, turning crisp, or purple onions sliced over tender summer greens, arugula or bib, chunks of blue vein cheese with oil that soaked the Tuscan sun, and Morton's kosher salt. And yes, I'd like some hearty, heavy bread, brown and crusty, embedded with sesame seeds and lots of crunchy nuts, walnuts, pine, and such. Let me add some ripe tomato from the garden, tended since spring by the dearest little soul I know, who would like some peanut butter and jelly. This is something I wrote a long time ago for my daughter. It's called Heather. My sturdy little girl, to whom were you loaned before me? With which prince did you dance? Through what streets did you ride? Whose ancient eyes burned into yours such knowing? How is it you know to be so at home in the sun of this world, so resolute, so beautiful, so free, a flower, a child so poised to disappear as I never could into such a woman? In what life did you learn? What vanished star did you see? My darling, who was your mother before it was me? This is a poem for my lost son. It's called Now the Sadness. Now the sadness of searching for one lost and not found in memory, but for a static camera image. The same twist of body dodging the swells, a smile at 14 reflecting bright sunlight, a striped bathing suit, the blue-green Atlantic. What perverse circuitry of suffering brain fastens on this utter stillness, this image caught forever in an unmovable moment? Sans touch, sans smell, sans taste. Why only the eye as lordly registrar of what was? Why the partnership with torment that hoards a berry scent, a young baritone, a mother's kiss on tender skin? Why this outrage, this thievery? This is the last of the family poems. This is called The Consummate Tapestry. April 25th, the first crude pastel day. Pink, lime, yellow, made up, so gaudy, the eye tears. Some springtime, late this year, 3 days until my son's birthday. The only perfect decision I ever made in this life. No abortion, my choice. So I thank myself 46 times now. I pass a workman in a slicker and cap, wires on the ground around him. Watch your step. I will. And I know learned folk who say this matters as much as my precious son's birth. Every hair on David's head is counted. So the workman in the street, his appearance in the consummate tapestry. Another theme that has been very constant in my work is the theme of the Holocaust. I've done a lot of poetry and other paintings and programs with the Holocaust Center. Something that has bothered me a lot as an American Jew is the fact that many of my own people do not fully grasp or carry with them the horrible lessons of the Holocaust. So this is a poem called I Apologize. I apologize to my precious elders, the valuable ones, those thick-fleshed, indestructible Jews I have known, those who endured, those who had the clenched tooth grit to flee before the ovens were lit, those Bergs and Steins and Skis, those tailors, artists, bakers, peddlers, scholars, music makers, who did not become the incinerated trash of Europe. My own people, once stalwart as the stars, must now weep as we, their stunning progeny, disappear like shadows into the cracked cement of sweet America, our brainless heads sucked under the white foam, merging, whistling, forgetting, drowning, dancing, no lessons learned, refusing to keep anything. The other Holocaust poem that I'll share with you is one that's been, actually, I'm proud of this. This is a part of the permanent collection at the Holocaust Museum in Balboa, California. It's called Yad Vashem. Yad Vashem is the name of the memorial to the victims of the Holocaust in Jerusalem. Yad Vashem. Here bloom green carob trees, sweet with spring. The righteous few are not forgotten in our garden. Silence pours from leaf and vine. Note the smooth stone shapes amid the blossoms, the sculpted mother's arms around her baby, tenderness, the first remembrance of the human artist. Beyond the blossoms, his last remembrance, darkness, the dying ashes, the tiny flames that burn eternal within the concrete and basalt. thought I'd add and end with a couple of title poems from my book. This poem is called Carousel, from the book Carousel. Carousel. I who want speed, tumble and crash, struggle to right myself. Ponies bow down, ivory teeth bare, nostrils spread wide. I roll to my left, creep to my knees, ponies spin on, edges blend and blur. Angels and cherubs watch my body go down again and again. Ponies rear back, painted hoofs rise, blank eyes stare. Full circle mechanics fuel whistles and horns, plexiglass parts. Wounds will heal, swellings recede, scars will be pink, but not pretty, unlikely roses, roses as bruises on limbs and on lips, and ponies spin on. Pittsburgh, the book was Orange Fire, it's a Main Street Rand. This is Orange Fire. 1956, hard dirt and stones around my tree. A telly pole with lots of jaggy nails. Our yard hangs over U.S. steel. It always rains, puddles up the holes where long gray worms stretch even longer and tiny dragons float dead at night. I love it when the sky burns up. No smoke, just orange fire. This is a poem that won. This is a kind of curmudgeon-y poem, but it did win a poetry award. It's called Urbanity. How to tolerate crowds of human strangers, all those bodies that sweat and push, displace space and air, and seats on buses or clog the roadways. I don't mean robbers, rapists, or molesters, or anything like that. I mean the strangers who load up on wine in restaurants and scream their shrill heads off when they're trying to eat. The ones who smell lousy that you have to wait behind in long lines at the store. The ones who run red lights and cut you off in traffic. And what about all the pretending that goes on? One honest curmudgeon said, hell is other people. But few will admit that is the truth, nor will most admit a reasonable preference for dogs. This is called survivorship. I, born into freedom, some limits inflicted, parental craziness. My father, a stone, silent. My mother, a secret gambler, consequently a liar. I, her reluctant accomplice. I, wild green weed, a pest growing thick, hell-bent limbs, driving my wheels through the muck, craving sugar, ballet shoes, other kids, the boy next door. I, telling lies, my mother's daughter, wishing for love, bossing my little brother around. Nobody beat me up. I, America. Only one promise ever kept, to escape the mob, never be part of it. The prize, the critical mind, a knowing. I, remainder, the need to go on, the bind, these guts and this soul, all my sweet dead, the wanting. All right. You've heard this before, but in honor of the fact that 3 days from now, July 29th, is National Lipstick Day. So I'm going to read my ode to lipstick, why I love my lipstick. I maybe should explain to the gentleman here that's people that make these cosmetics try to tempt women with the names that they give to the lipstick. And they're always very fancy. Why I love my lipstick. Because in clearly crimson, I can sing a siren song. Because in crystal coral, I am never alone too long. I can name the stars for Martin, weary starlet pink, or speak my mind to Philip, tell him what I think. Because in lilac rose, I do not hide in bed. I can outdazzle anybody wearing all-star red. Because in silvery mauve, I lay claim to copper skies. Because in copper glazed brown, I never apologize. At night, by naked bronze glow, I hear my lover sing. Inside his purple kisses, I drink wine with everything. In the August of my life, I still savor cherries in the snow and treasure the girlish heart that compels me to do so. I am boldness, beauty, devil, and charmer in a beeswax, cold tar, and fragrance armor. Thank you.
So this is, I'm going to read one of the, really the favorite bio notes I've ever seen. So get ready. Megan Tutelo is an artist with some writing degrees and two smooshy. Let me just start over because this is so wonderful. Megan Tutelo is an artist. With some writing degrees and two smushy-faced cats. She romances olives and Italian food by day and stays up all night creating things. When Megan isn't writing or creating, she can be found riding around on her pipsqueak motorcycle. Okay, stalking cats on Instagram or binging another true crime podcast. Her poems have appeared in Rattle, Weave, Nerve Cowboy, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, among others. Her first chapbook, Little as Living, was published by Dancing Girl Press. Please welcome Megan Tutelo. Hi. Wow, I feel like an animal they just let out of its cage. It's been a long time because, you know, COVID and stuff. So this is weird. I haven't really been out like at a reading or anything. So so actually I'm really sick of myself, but I still wanted to read some poems for you. So is anyone else just sick of themselves, or is this like mid-30s? Like I'm over it. I'd rather hear about you. So anyway, I've got a few new poems, and actually they are COVID themed because I'm trying to process all this shit that's been going on, and it's better than the politics, which are just making me angry. So we're gonna try to, fuck politics. Anyway, I very much enjoyed your work. And I only hope to be able to write so eloquently about the injustices going on and someday, but not yet. In the meantime, I'm gonna write about spaghetti and houseplants. And all right, so this one's called Drive-Thru Spaghetti Dinner. It's 2020 and the signs are everywhere. An informal invitation, apocalypse red with white letters, Drive-Thru Spaghetti Dinner. Like how I keep telling people in all caps, the end is near. So suddenly I'm some street prophet, only more monotone because it's half joke. And the other half is as serious as baby blue surgical masks stuck everywhere, strapped over our mouths, dangling from rear view mirrors, drowning in oily puddles like parking lot jellyfish. But then there's pasta. And you know, that's something. Something you can't zoom through, hope as real as smashed tomatoes over slippery noodles and the smell of soggy garlic bread wrapped in tin foil with love. Did anyone do that spaghetti, that drive-thru spaghetti dinner? anyone? I was just wondering if people like actually ate the spaghetti in the car. That's what I was imagining. Okay, so anyway, this one's called 115 Houseplants, and as of today, it's 116. I'm not lying. You can come over. All right. 115 Houseplants. I enter Lowe's with a savior complex, with an eye for the hopeless, sunken cacti, scorched calathea. What can I do? Back home, I move the plants from room to room, tenderly, indecisively, chase sun and shadow to get it right. So this is how it feels to be king. I poke one finger into the dirt and ask, are you thirsty? The cats follow me, my nervous energy, trot in the wake of loose soil and dead leaves. They know my love is worry, and how I worry endlessly, afraid to fail to keep us all alive. Let's break up the COVID real fast, because I know we're all sick of it, but. Yeah. I'm gonna knock on wood. I haven't gotten it yet, so I feel like a walking target. Maybe that's why I'm still stuck around homes on it. It's fine. All right, you know what? We're gonna go with this one. It is COVID. I'm sorry, kids. I've just been finding different ways to think about it because I still don't understand, like, life has changed a lot, and you know, we write because we're trying to figure shit out, right? Process it, connect with people. It's called Survivor, COVID-19 edition. So this is the island, aloneness. Once just a glittering mirage, a treasure song of introverts and homebodies, people who read too many books. This was a game we'd play in school back in the days of CD players and tongue rings and prank phone calls. If you were stranded on an island and could only bring three things, we'd ask each other as if we could live off the land, knocking coconuts, catching fish with our bare hands, talking to bloody volleyballs, living without time, all to the soundtrack of our favorite Tori Amos album on repeat. But this is our island now, complete with plasticky palm trees, a smug sun grinning cheesy like a souvenir mug, all with our names spelled wrong. And who wouldn't be grateful for this, each moment not dying? So I ask you, if a tree falls in the forest or an island or your backyard and no one is there to hear it, does it even fall really? Do I even exist? All right, one nerdy love song, because, you know, that's what I'm usually good for. And then an end song. Okay. These are short. Unrequited love as a binary white dwarf star. You are how I know I exist. Inner orbit, codependence. But I think, isn't it romantic to be this degenerate, stellar remnant? I continue in symbiotic sabotage, the bright loop where we're both dying, and someone somewhere makes a wish. The way I love you, but only because I have to. And every time I see you, we almost collide, but we never do. The binary system of two stars that basically go around each other, and it's a long story, but like our sun will probably turn into a white dwarf someday. It's like when all of its energy is like, and then it's just sort of like giving off energy or radiation. So it's kind of gravity that keeps them like spinning until they just collapse into each other and turn into a supernova if they're lucky. Only love could be that beautiful. A little bit. Before I end here, I wanted to thank everybody for being here and for having me.
I was super nervous. He's been so long, and I do art, so like, I feel like I'm in that world real hard, and it's just weird when you're. It seems like a lot of people do art, which is great. I find it easier to do art lately. I don't know why. I think it's just like, I don't know, so many things happening. I don't know, make stained glass. But anyway, thanks again for having me. It's an honor. And I thought I was ending because that's how it was listed at first. No big deal. But I picked a really cheesy poem to end with because it's like my wish to you kind of like, it's cheesy. It's called a bad Instagram poem because they call those little snippets of like really accessible poems that people write on those little, yeah. So it's admittedly a bad cheesy poem, but that's, you'll see. A bad Instagram poem. When you think of it, when you really stop to step out of your body, to forget a parade of ants in your kitchen, the calls you make, the rainwater pooling on your basement floor, the million atrocities filling up news feeds. This life really is so simple. So breathe from your belly, let your heart be as loud as your guts, sing and live now like you mean it. Thank you.
Closing poem, yes. Now, before I introduce our last reader, I want to remind you that there are books for sale here. This is a bookstore. The poets have brought books for sale, and there are some other books too. And so, you know, and I kind of encourage you to really browse around tonight. We've got some time and not to pitch us out right away. We are going to need to take the group photo, which is very important for the blog. And then we will release the poets to their appreciative, devoted fans. Okay. Of course, book signing and hurrahs, cheers, and so forth. And thank you all again for being here tonight. And hope you come back in 2 weeks for the last Hemingways of 2022. Now, Maine native Anastasia Walker is a poet, essayist, and scholar living in Pittsburgh. Her poems have appeared in several journals. Her first book of poetry, The Girl Who Wasn't and Is, was published in February 2022. Her essays have appeared in Shenandoah, Fourth Genre and Rambling, and The Rambling. She has blogged on politics, social media, and LGBTQ issues plus issues for both Huffington, sorry, I messed that up. For both Huffington Post and Medium. She's a proud member of her community's Indivisible group and a passionate amateur photographer and musicologist and a lover of long walks and, when she visits home for the summers, swimming in the ocean. And a big happy birthday to her mother.
Ah, okay, yay. We know you're on the Zoom. We hope you're on the Zoom. And please welcome Anastasia Walker.
Drum will not steal my thunder. All right. So I know I'm the last. I'm also the tallest. So I don't know if that was by design or not. I have a loud voice, so I might not even need much of the mic. But we shall see. Anyway, thank you for the intro. Be enthusiastic intro. You mustered the energy at the very end of this. And that was impressive. Thank you to you and Chris in absentia for the introduction, or for the invite, rather, for having me here. And to our host, White Whale. No venue, no party. So here we are. So thank you for that. So time is short, as you all were advised. We're 10 to 12 minutes apiece. So I'm just going to state the itinerary for my presentation and then pop right in. So I want to start with one new poem and then read just three from the book that John mentioned. All right. So the new poem. Megan, you're processing COVID, which I think we all have been. I've been processing the assault on my community. The queer community is under assault right now. So I had the news on before I came here tonight after my work shift, and apparently Trump, the former guy, at his presentation, speech, I don't know, spit out, whatever you want to call it, what he does, in Washington, D.C., first time he'd been back since he left in disgrace a year and a half ago, did a little ad lib in his speech. And that ad lib was to, don't you hate it when men compete with women in sports? And that was his way of trolling transgender women. Apparently got a huge cheer, like people standing up clapping, you know. ACLU recently came across a piece. Through the first half of this year, there have been more anti-LGBTQ plus pieces of legislation introduced in red state, mostly, legislatures. Through the first 6 months, then there were all of last year, and last year was a shitty year. And last year, there were twice as many as the year before. And 2020, if you remember it, was also a shitty year. So anyway, my community is under assault. And one way to respond to that, there was reference to processing, right? One way that I process that is to write about it. So I've written several pieces over the last 6, 7, 8 months or so. They've ranged emotionally from rage on one end to deep despondency on the other. This one that I'm going to read for you now lands somewhere in the middle. Let's call it anxiety. And it's a good one to read too, to sort of get out the early reading jitters. And it's called The Future Is. Dystopic Countdown. The future's a four-pronged path. The path on the left winds through unnumbered nights to a street where no one sees you. Middle paths will see you by circuitous routes to the path on the right. Do not take the path on the right. The future's a three-headed dog. Your songs might appease and reunite you with her, but she's dead to the rest now. The future's two doors. The one on the right reads right. The one on the left reads right. The future's one word, and that word's not you. The future's some anxiety over the last few months. I'm losing sleep. Okay, so now I want to just read three from my book, The Girl Who Wasn't It Is. Snap the cover and all. And they're going to be, on the whole, much more upbeat. So just, you've been forewarned to get ready to smile a little bit. The first one is one of 8 love songs that I put in the book. And they're not love songs in any, you know, conventional romantic boy meets girl, girl meets boy, boy meets boy, girl meets girl, et cetera, romantic sense. One of the love songs is about aversion therapy. I wrote a love song to death. So there are a couple in there about separation. So you get the point. Love is a complex emotion, and these poems sort of explore many facets of this very powerful emotion that probably more than any emotion makes us fully human. So This song is an upbeat one, and it's called Love Song Congruence, and it's about basically the time when I finally started to fully, richly occupy my own body after I came out some years back. So Love Song Congruence. How to say the wonder of these newfound lands, the sweet snow melt bubbling from this tongue, the grace in these arms, these hands, these fingers, hips, legs, feet, of the turn swoops, the diamond darts of the herring shoals, the deer's tiptoe dances in the dawn-dewed grass, or the way the dragonflies and bees seem to hover in the morning sun out of gravity. How to convey the marble gently rolling plains of fat. I'm a private now. The miracle of breasts. Okay, and the other two that I'll do are also autobiographical, and these are about my relationship with my family and largely my parents. So this first one is, I guess the sort of the one thing that it speaks to me about is that even when you're really blessed to come from a supportive, loving family, coming out and being trans is just plain hard sometimes. And the poem is called Hope's the Drug You. Hopes the drug you never lectured me on. Hope that I might dig through the heaped up defenses of so many generations and find you bigger than you are. But then time with a shrug opens its door to my foxhole decades below the frost line, watching you laud the triumphs laid at the tutelary altar and chalk over the desiccated smiles, the dirt sliding from the cracks, and the silence of the snow-bitten wood after a winter gale throbs through my heart. Blames, a stupid game I won't play. My erasure was mine for everyone. And to be known as well as loved was a big ask and probably a selfish one. But when I see it wither again and again in the sun-soaked nostalgia for a young world where I was impossible, I can't help but wonder whether it would have been best if you drown me in the leech field when you have the chance. Okay, last one. And this is, this is my mother's 80th birthday tomorrow. My mom says, you know, age is just a number, so I trust, you know, she's online, she won't mind my telling you folks in here. Feisty as ever at the age of 80. Just a quick story, I mentioned this to Joan when I arrived today. So I received the invite to participate in this reading back in late January. And, you know, of course I knew my mother was going to be 80 in July, so I was reading the email, I was like, can I get invited? I was like, yes. And let's read a little further, and I get to the date that's like, oh, you know, because it's like, oh, she lives up in Maine. So that's the back, she's still up in Maine where I grew up. So obviously I'm not going to be there for her birthday tomorrow. So this is in part a way of partially atoning for my absence tomorrow. And it's another of the love songs, and it's called simply Love Song Grandma. So many times, unkind assumptions leeching from my fault lines have muddied our moments together. And yet here you are now, again, with your beautiful courage after so many scarring years, telling me how beautiful I am and that you love me. And somehow, again, the salve I crave shocks, and I cower in shadows, familial embrace from the sweet lesson of surrender.
Thank you all so much. As Jimmy Savannah, the founder of this series, who kept it going, for those of you who don't know, for 45 years, pretty much solo, so the last few years, as he would say, and he would have said tonight, you have honored poetry. And we thank you all very much for your poetry, for your stories, for the openness, the heart-centered generosity of sharing your stories, your lives with our readers, our listeners. We are going to be gone for 2 weeks. We will be back on August the 9th, and then we'll be back next year. And I hope you will all be here for our final reading, and I really hope you all are having a good summer. It's a tough summer in so many ways, but we should have Megan come up and read that last poem again. That was right on. So that we'll take a little break for the photo, and I hope you really. Well, I'm going to buy some books tonight. I know I'm going to buy some books tonight. So how about you? Thank you all, and thanks to White Whale.